A fisheries scientist says the government's move to ban commercial fishing skippers throwing out unwanted catch overboard is the biggest change to fisheries management in 100 years. The Minister for Oceans and Fisheries, David Parker, has announced intended changes to the law, meaning commercial skippers will have to bring everything they catch back to port. Cameras are to be put on 300 vessels over the next 4 years to enforce the new rules at a cost of $68 million. The changes follow a damning report in 2016 by Mike Herron QC, which confirmed widespread fish dumping as a practice in the industry and flawed prosecution procedures by the Ministry for Primary Industries. At the time, MPI committed to accelerating electronic monitoring across the entire fishing fleet. However, this has been resisted by the industry, has been subject to several delays, and 5 years later is still largely undelivered on. Fisheries researcher Dr. Glenn Simmons says the dumping ban announced by Minister Parker yesterday is more significant and will be more effective than the introduction of the quota management system. It was his initial research that prompted the Herron report, and we'll hear from Glenn Simmons shortly. But first, the Oceans and Fisheries Minister David Parker is with me. Kia ora and welcome, Minister.
Thank you. Good morning.
So work me through these changes, please. Can we begin with the dumping at sea? Will everything have to come to shore now? Fishers obviously used to be worried that they would be over quota on some species. It was a reason for dumping. But does everything have to come back now?
Yes, with a very limited exception in respect of some fish like spiny dogfish that excrete ammonia if they're in the bucket with the rest of the fish and ruin the other fish. But other than that exception, yes, fish will have to be landed if they are caught. The status quo is that a lot of the fish that are caught and put back are dead. And in fairness to the fishers, also the rules are pretty confusing. They differ between species. There are different minimum sizes and there are different rules applying to different species. So these will be simpler rules for them to apply to.
So they have to return alive or dead?
Well, they're dead by the time they... Yeah, well, whether they're alive or dead when they come out of their net, they've got to be landed.
What difference will this make?
Well, it changes the incentives quite a lot. You know, you made reference to the report by Mike Herron. He did an inquiry on behalf of the prior national government into some reports that came out through Glenn Simmons and others about Operations Achilles and Hippocamp, which showed that there were significant both discards and what they call high grading, which is where some fishers discard the fish that they'll get less money for in order to return only the fish and report against their quota only the fish that are most valuable. So we'll never know exactly what level there was of high grading and illegal discard, nor the exact levels of legal discards, but they are both material, cameras on boats together with these new rules will effectively put an end to it.
So what will happen to the fisher if they are bringing back catch that is over quota or not in their quota and having to report it? What are the changes that sit alongside this?
Well, they have to report it against their quota, and they ought to have been anyway.
Okay, so that is a big incentive to change practice?
It's a big incentive to target your fishing, to avoid bycatch and to avoid the little fish, because we don't want the little fish being caught. This isn't about incentivising little fish to be caught. It's actually incentivising the avoidance of bycatch.
What is that going to mean? Are they going to have to upgrade equipment and practices, because it's unlikely they are deliberately doing this? Yes, they may be gaming by throwing off smaller fish to replace with bigger fish, but the unintended bycatch...
That's clearly deliberate.
Okay, but yeah. Is the unintended bycatch also happening because practices and equipment are simply not refined enough?
Some of it's unavoidable, so there will always be a level of bycatch, sometimes my understanding is if you target your fishing effort in an area if you're starting to catch lots of little fish, you should probably move on to an area where you catch bigger fish. So those sorts of practices don't require a change in fishing gear. They require a change in the way in which they're using their fishing gear. That said, there are other fishers who are using innovative forms of nets. Sanford's are experimenting or using actually some modern nets that don't cause as much damage to the fish. There are other people who are sort of putting steel gate structures in front of their the opening of their nets so that they don't get as many little fish going into the nets. So technology will play a part.
Now, this is inshore fisheries, we should remind people. Alongside this is the move on cameras on boats. Now, can we just do a little bit of the history here? It was the previous national government that first talked about introducing them. Your predecessor as Ministry of Fisheries, Stuart Nash, postponed cameras on boats in 2017. I think they were delayed again in January 19, again in June 2020. What was going on?
Well, a number of things. One, they weren't completely delayed. They have been deployed in respect of the a lot of the fishing boats that are at risk of entangling Maui's dolphins. But the wider, you're right that the wider rollout was delayed. Part of that was cost. It's a $68 million venture. And indeed, to fund it this time, because I'm also the Minister for the Environment, I've had to reallocate some money out of freshwater improvement. The Department of Conservation has come up with $10 million of that money from memory from, and it might even be more, from their baselines for other things, because we all believe that it's so important. So, we've prioritised this now over other efforts, which is what governments have to do.
Was there also resistance from your then coalition partner?
Yeah, I think New Zealand First went as enamoured with cameras and boats as we are. That was part of it, but I wouldn't want to blame it all on them.
Industry put up strong arguments against this. They were saying the cameras are simply not practical. You don't accept this.
No, and indeed it was interesting yesterday that one of the large fishing companies came out and said that they're ready for this now and that they think that the transparency that it will bring is good for the industry, as well as, from my perspective, good for the environment.
What are the practices the cameras are there to scrutinise other than the dumping? Or is it primarily the dumping? Is it part two of the dumping focus?
Yes, it's primarily about getting better outcomes with less discarding. But it's also will have a benefit into encouraging all fishers, if they do accidentally catch a seabird or a dolphin, to report that, because it'll be captured on the video footage and there'll be no doubt about it. So we will have, there's already allowances in our calculations of seabird and mammal bycatch for unreported catches. But that's an estimate. Now we'll have real video footage, which will both encourage more honest reporting by those people who do accidentally catch birds and dolphins. And I would emphasise that no one wants to do that, but when they do, we'll now know it happens.
Is this subject to further consultation, or this, as outlined, is going to Cabinet in quite soon? What's its status?
Oh, well, Cabinet's already approved it.
Right.
So, we'll be consulting on the detail of how we do it rather than whether we do it.
What else? Go ahead.
There is a bit of process here to get the technology right. You know, I think there are about 1,500 or 12 to 1,500 of these cameras used worldwide. So once we get 300, you can see that we're, pretty big share of the cameras being used in the world. So we'll be at the leading edge of it. And we want to deploy new technologies to minimise the cost of screening for all of this huge amount of video evidence using artificial intelligence and machine learning. So all of those things have to be designed into the system to do this cost effectively.
So it's not a case that someone's sitting there looking at all this video. It's not that you do occasional stings on the video. You're going to use AI to be constantly monitoring.
Yes, to automate those tasks. There will still be people involved, and I would expect that the artificial intelligence would identify areas that ought to be scrutinised by people, but rather than people having to look through every bit of footage, machines will be doing a lot of it for us.
What happens to prosecutions? Because with this much more evidence gathering, there's obviously the likelihood of finding more breaches, and are you amending prosecutions to reflect that?
Yes, we are. The current prosecution regime is really used and incredibly harsh when it is used. And for just about, for so many offences under the Fisheries Act, confiscation of the boat is automatic, almost, followed by a process to get it back if that's a bit over the top. Now, part of that has been because it's been so hard to detect fishing offences at sea, because no one's there unless it's a big deep sea boat with an observer on board, and you don't generally have that in the inshore fishery. So now that we're going to have more technology and more information available, we think that we can move to a more a different penalties regime that reflects the seriousness of breaches. So if it's a small breach, you would expect small consequences, and if it's a major one, you'd have more major ones.
Do you have other plans in the works, other proposals that you are working on now? And if so, can you indicate them?
We do want to work with industry to improve bottom trawling practices and trawling practices generally. I know there are calls for us to ban all deep sea bottom trawling, but we're not proposing that. We do want to improve the technology that's deployed to make that less damaging on benthic environments. We've also got some work being done on how we transition the workforce in respect of the deep sea fishery to a more New Zealand workforce. Some of the companies are just about all employed all New Zealanders. Others employ virtually all Russians. So there's something, there's some things there that need to be worked on, and we're going to do work on that. There's some announcements coming next week on what we do in the Hauraki Gulf. That's a very complex issue there, with New Zealand's largest population centre just next door, and pressures from land-based pollution causing sediment to the bottom, as well as pressures from other factors. So yeah, there's a lot of work going on in the fishery space.
There is. Can I just zero in on that Hauraki Gulf one, because I was going to raise it anyway? That and the scallop beds in places like Tasman, Marlborough, that have pretty much got to the point where they need to be, well, are closed at times. What's driving the situation in the Hauraki Gulf? Do you believe that some of these changes are going to be part of the solution there? Or what else is in play with respect to these annual or biannual reports we get on the state of the Gulf that just seem to get worse and worse? Or certainly don't improve?
I'm not in a position to make those announcements today. Suffice it to say, there's been a lot of work done by a lot of people over a lot of years, and not much has been landed yet. So, we want to make some progress in that sphere, but I'll go into that on another day.
You're also flagging forward-looking, perhaps enhanced local co-management of fisheries. And when I raise things like the scallop beds in one part of the country, but we could go to various parts of the country, are you envisaging some changes there? And if so, what might they be?
Well, if we deal with scallops a little, I'm really worried about scallops. It seems to me that, you look at the graphs of scallop catch and it's just collapsed just about everywhere where they're found. And then occasionally a new bed is found of scallops and it's plundered and it's gone. It's a combination of GPS technology and, people using dredges, and just about like mowing the lawn at Lord's, going backwards and forwards with GPS technology precision. You can see how you could plunder a new bed of scallops once found. And I think that's what's happened in New Zealand. Added to that, the pressure caused by land use causing sediment to flow into some of the areas where scallops used to be found, and we're finding it very hard as a country to re-establish previously lost scallop beds because of the sediment that's now on the bottom of the sea that's come from the land. So they're very complex problems to fix, but I think I will be paying some real attention to the scallop problem in the coming months. It's not part of this lot of announcements that we've made now. That in itself is a big piece of work that we've just knocked off. But I'm going to be looking at scallops later in the year.
Co-management suggests that communities themselves might have a greater say perhaps in what the rules are and whether you can be dredging here or there, for example.
I suspect those dredging rules would be more likely to be set at a national level.
Right.
But you're quite right that, QMS or quota management areas are very, very large. They can be sort of half of one of our islands long. And you can have a population of fish that within the quota management area are quite healthy while still having local depletions that affect the way in which people living on the coast can, catch a fish if they want to. And so we are looking at whether there are some other ways in which we can experiment with more granular management at the local level.
You mentioned the offshore fishers. Big issues there as well, and I'm not sure how far the mandate extends. I'd like you to elaborate. I mean, we've also had big issues there and still have big issues with labour standards. And again, I think you flagged this is something that is on the forward agenda.
Yes. Well, you know, as I mentioned earlier, there are some deep sea fishing boats that are 100% crewed by overseas fishermen working on boats where all of the instructions are in Cyrillic, and even the repair people who are servicing the vessels are flown in from overseas. So you can see that that part of the economic value of the fishing industry is lost to the country because it flows out of the country and the wages that are paid for those people. Now, it's very difficult for these companies to change that status quo quickly. We understand that, and if we were to ban that overnight, then those fish would not be caught. Those boats would be idle, and there would be, you know, adverse economic effects for the country that we want to avoid. But nonetheless, it is quite stark to me that some other companies managed to achieve similar outcomes, or, you know, better outcomes using a New Zealand workforce. And so we've got to drill into how it is that we can encourage the industry to transition away from over-reliance on overseas workers and replace them with both technology and New Zealand workers.
Are you planning an inquiry into the conditions of migrant workers, though?
No, not an inquiry into the conditions of those migrant workers, but I am going to seek some advice from some external people as to how we could, and industry people working together, as to how we can cause that transition to begin.
You've established or intending to establish an Oceans and Marine Ministers Group and Secretariat hosted by DOC. This is interesting. Fisheries is often perceived to be very much focused on the commercial, economic side of things. What is the significance of that secretariat?
Well, the chief science advisor made a couple of points. Firstly, she did, was quite, I thought, proper in her defence of Fisheries New Zealand. It's not fair to say that they're only interested in commercial fishing or recreational fishing. They are interested in environmental outcomes. And I can attest to that as their minister, that they seek to achieve that as well. But it's also one of the recommendations of the chief science advisor when she looked into these issues was that we set up an oceans and fisheries minister, which is me, and that we try to bring to a more holistic view to the management of our oceans so that we are focusing perhaps less on an individual fish species and more on ecosystems. Now, if you have a healthy ecosystem, you would expect that you would have a healthy fishery as well. One of the ways we're planning to do that is to take that more holistic look, is to try and bring the Department of Conservation and Fisheries perspectives closer together through the mechanism that you've described.
I thank you for your time. David Parker is the Minister for Oceans and Fisheries, which is, interestingly, a new title for many decades, of course. It's been the Minister of Fisheries. 27 minutes past nine it is on 9 to noon. Glenn Simmons is listening in to that. He's a fisheries scientist. He says the government's move to ban commercial fishing skippers throwing unwanted catch overboard is the biggest change to fisheries management in 100 years. As we said, it was his research, published back in 2016, in fact broadcast on the show, I think, that led to the Heron Review and to the initial moves towards cameras on boats, long delayed, as we said. Kia ora, Glenn.
Kia ora, good morning.
So it's been a long time coming. What do you make of what's been announced, or confirmed really? The move to put cameras on boats has been government policy certainly since the election, but now the money's there and it appears to be over the next 4 years it's all go. And then second, the move on fish dumping and now having to report.
First off, I think what it demonstrates is finally, since the introduction of the quota management system, we have some rather bold political leadership. So I'm really pleased to see the decisions that the minister and cabinet have made. And certainly when I look at the other decisions that are looming, there's going to be some very, or more than a shake-up in fisheries. Probably the biggest changes, even before the quota management system was introduced in the 80s, and I would argue that The change on the discard ban alone is the biggest change to reporting since the original Fisheries Act back in 1908, so it's more than 100 years.
Why is it so significant? Take us back to your own research that you did. Goodness, we're going back 2015, 2016, aren't we? And
yes.
How did you go about your work? Because this is the question. It's been seen as so opaque, so difficult
yes.
to know. How did you go about
yes.
your work?
Well, at the time, back in May, I think it was 16th of May 2016, when we released the catch reconstruction, a lot of the industry and other people who were quick to critique it didn't actually bother to read it, because if they had have, they would have realised that it was grounded in the Ministry of Fisheries and the Ministry of Primary Industries' own reports. Over 200 compliance reports informed the catch reconstruction. And one of those, of course, got considerable airtime, Operation Achilles. And others have since come out through the media or that the ministry have released. Now, in a nutshell, those reports showed that somewhere between 20 and 100% of every catch was dumped. And in some cases, like in the Operation Achilles, it was up to 100% of quota species were regularly dumped, even when observers were on vessels.
The reasons I mentioned, was it fear of being over quota? The second reason that the minister also confirmed was simply, I'll dump a smaller fish and catch a bigger fish, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, we identified about 10 different reasons for the dumping. It's too big, wouldn't fit in the carton, too small, wrong species, it was damaged, it was the wrong colour, and so on and so on. So there's many reasons for it. One of the biggest drivers that we identified was actually the quota management itself. Quota management system actually incentivizes dumping, and part of the reason for that, and this is where New Zealand is quite distinct from other countries, in particular Iceland and Norway, when they introduced their quota system, there was two fundamental tenets that they implemented as mandated by the original architects of the quota management system from University of British Columbia. And the first was there should be a discarding ban, which both Iceland and Norway put in place when they introduced their quota systems. And secondly, was effective, very effective oversight and enforcement. And the third is absolutely independent science, and neither of those three things have we had in New Zealand. The science is industry captured, the dumping rules that they were allowed to dump legally were actually a leftover from the old days of the 60s and 70s and somehow found its way into the new act. And we have this crazy situation where fishermen were obliged to actually, by law, they had to dump small fish like snapper. It was a requirement of the law,
okay.
and to date, you know, a lot of people don't know why.
Well, how is this going to affect, because if this is now counted against their quotas, they're going to take a hit, right? If they're catching fish that they can't sell, they're going to
yep.
take a hit unless they can adapt practice. Now, I asked what innovations this might encourage. What innovations
yep.
do you believe it will encourage?
Okay. The two big ones, and this is what the evidence shows both in Iceland and in Norway, is first off, it will create new markets for bycatch that previously the industry looked at as being worthless. So there'll be much better utilization of bycatch products. And for instance, that's gone down the pathway in Iceland where now the fillet is actually the byproduct and it's the waste and the bycatch that's far more valuable, in some cases up to 10 times more valuable than the fillet. That's the first area. The second is in terms of changing fishermen's behavior and in the innovation in the net space and how they're catching the fish. And there's been huge advances both in Iceland and in Norway, far more than in New Zealand, in terms of net technology and the lengths that they've gone to mitigate bycatch.
Just finally, you've done a lot of work, Glenn, on the circumstances of migrant workers. And
yes.
Particularly we're talking the offshore fisheries now, right, the deep sea fisheries.
Yes.
What do you make of what the minister is indicating? He seems to be saying his focus is simply to have more New Zealand workers on these boats. This is, seems to be an overall goal of this government in just about every area of the productive sector at the moment. Fewer migrants, more New Zealand citizens in the roles.
Yep.
Do you believe that's feasible from what you're seeing, and what do you believe the response is going to be when it comes to the treatment, I guess, of the current workforce?
Yes, I do. And in fact, my evidence to the ministerial inquiry back in 2011 and subsequently to the Select Committee a couple of years later was unequivocal, and it was actually supported by some people in the fishing industry currently, that New Zealanders should be catching, you know, our fish. And in fact, it's well demonstrated by one of our largest company, Tallies. Tallies have long only used New Zealanders. Their skippers are earning huge amounts of money. Even a deckhand can be earning in excess of $70,000 a year. And I understand the business model on these foreign charter vessels, and it's an archaic model, and it's predicated on low or very low wages and conditions. And we have one large operator that can go out with high quality vessels and a highly motivated and well-paid crew that is probably one of the most profitable, if not the most profitable, fishing company in New Zealand. They can do it, yet these other companies using foreign charter vessels claim this is the only way that they can have an economic viable business model. I absolutely disagree with that, and I think the minister has picked up on that, and the government. The fact remains that New Zealanders will work in the industry if the conditions are appropriate and they're paid fairly, and I think that's where the government's coming from, and I take my hat off to them. It's laudable.
Thank you, Glenn Simmons, independent fisheries scientist.